As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
As always, the Audible is presented by our friends at Trader Joe's. By the way, Stu, I don't know if you are a big tuna fish fan, but I like it every once in a while. The best tuna fish I have ever had, by far, Trader Joe's. My wife brought it home a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, man, this is really, really good. You and I have talked about how much we like certain things we can only get at Trader Joe's. Add that to the top of the list for me. If you like tuna fish, I'm telling you, you got to go get theirs. Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible, presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. Stu, we were not expecting, it was not a great slate of games on Saturday. It was kind of a, there was a few things that were definitely interesting. Penn State got upset by Illinois, back-to-back losses for the Nittany Lions. We'll dig into that in a minute. The Big Ten, I think, is going to be the most interesting conference in the second half of the season. We got a couple of big games this weekend, although one not as big with Penn State losing that are upcoming. What jumped out at you from what we're seeing from the Big Ten right now?
Well, I think that we can get into the Penn State part of it in a second, but I mean, what Ohio State is doing on offense right now is absolutely insane. We knew they had all these weapons on offense. I feel like maybe those first couple games, C.J. Stroud wasn't quite comfortable yet. Travion Henderson was still getting into the mix. Indiana's usually pretty good on defense. I know they were down their top two cornerbacks, and about the worst team that can happen to, but that could happen to you against. But Ohio State just destroyed them, and Bill Landis, our Ohio State writer, had some pretty remarkable stats in his story about it. So, per Bill's story, offenses had 24 drives with Stroud at quarterback against Rutgers, Maryland, and Indiana and scored touchdowns on 20 of them. The other four were a field goal, a kneel down at the end of the half against Maryland, a three-play drive to end the first half against Rutgers, and a punt to open the second half Saturday night. That was the first time the first team offense had been held to a punt since the second quarter of the Akron game on September 25th. And in its last 156 plays with Stroud at quarterback, the offense has scored 150 points. So I'm wondering if you're like me, and I am really excited for the Michigan-Michigan State game. When do we ever get, I believe it's the first time since 1964, that they're meeting as top 10 teams. And yet, it just feels like this Ohio State thing is inevitable.
What is the Ohio State thing you're talking about? That they just run away with the Big Ten title?
That they go and win the Big Ten again like they always do.
I, having seen them in person a couple of weeks ago, I do think their offense is the most explosive in the country. I think a couple of big parts that are different, because obviously you had a great quarterback there last year who was an even better runner than C.J. Stroud, and that's obviously Justin Fields. Receivers are even better than they were last year because they have more experience and a little more depth. I think the offensive line is better. The other thing is Travion Henderson is a different dimension than what they've had there. I think he will be the best running back they've had there in a long, long time. And I would put him past what J.K. Dobbins, who had an amazing career there. But I just think this guy's really, really special. But I do want to introduce this caveat. When you were talking about Indiana being down a couple of cornerbacks, the game we had, Maryland, who's not that good on defense anyway, were down their top three cornerbacks. So they've gone on this roll, but you got to keep in mind this roll has been Akron, Rutgers, a depleted Maryland, and now a depleted Indiana. I think they, and I, you know, in our second half season predictions, I have Ohio State coming out of the Big Ten to make the playoff. Their defense, I think, is, as we know, is still the TBD piece of this because they got exposed against Oregon. They made a play caller shift going from Kerry Coombs to Matt Barnes, and they have gotten better. I still think that, you know, I think there's some hesitance about just how good they really are. I'm not, like, I think they're the best team in the Big Ten. I'm not ready to talk about, like, this Ohio State offense like some of these other, you know, like the LSU offense was under Joe Burrow. I still think, you know, you still have a very young quarterback running it. You know, it's just, yes, I think they're really dangerous. But I don't know if I'm not completely sold that this is going to be an all-time offense just because C.J. Stroud still hasn't played that much. And the teams that he's lighting up aren't very good right now.
Well, I'm not trying to say they're an all-time offense, but I'm trying to – let me put it to you this way. They've got three – and this is going to be great, right? Three big – it was going to be three top 10 games, but Penn State did not live up to its end of that. But of those three, Penn State, Michigan, Michigan State, which one would have the best chance to beat Ohio State?
You know, the only game that is on the road is Michigan. I think Michigan has the best chance to beat them. And the reason why I say that is – they have a couple of the best defensive players who can make a big impact. They have a really good defensive front and Aiden Hutchinson, who I think is an All-American. And also Dax Hill on the back end is a playmaker. And Josh Ross is a good linebacker. I think what helps Michigan State, I think, is, you know, they also have really good pressure with Panishuk, who can make a lot of plays and be very disruptive. But I just think, you know, if you were asking me who I think has the best chance, I think it's Michigan just because, like Michigan State, they have a really, really good run game. Now, look, Michigan State has shown that they have a more dangerous passing game at this point. Two really good receivers. Thorne, their quarterback, is played well. But again, I go back to how disruptive can you be on defense, and I think there are the pieces there for Michigan State. I know people are going to roll their eyes at this because we have seen those Don Brown defenses get pretty stubborn and get torched. I think this group could be a little different. I'm not picking them to win, but if you're asking me of those three who has the best chance, I would say Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, I look at it more as I don't think if somebody beats them, it's not going to be because their defense held Ohio State to 17 points. The Ohio State has one of those offenses that's you're going to have to outscore them. Michigan is still, you know, they're definitely a lot better on offense, certainly, than they've been the last couple of years, but it's still a very conservative, run the ball a lot. Cade McNamara is playing okay, but they're not really, he's not like a big force in their offense, whereas Michigan State, like you alluded to, has the top running back in the country, I believe top 15-ish passer in Peyton Thorne, and two great receivers. They've, to me, would have a better shot of exposing, if Ohio State's defense can still be exposed like it was against Oregon, Michigan State, to me, would have the best chance to do that. Now, all that being said, I don't know if Michigan State's going to be Michigan this week. I think that's a fascinating matchup, a toss-up game, and just great to have. I feel like usually the reason this is the first top 10 game since 1964, they're never good at the same time. It's always if Michigan's doing well as a program, Michigan State has John L. Smith as the coach, And if when Michigan State was doing great under D'Antonio, Michigan was flailing with Rich Rod and Brady Hoke. So to actually have them be good at the same time is going to make for a heck of a rivalry game.
The winner of this game, how much confidence would you have in them being a real playoff contender? Because right now, you know, you and I talked about this. I remember kind of looking at them going, you know, they're going to be, whatever, 5-0 before they play Wisconsin. I don't think either one of us thought Wisconsin was going to be as bad as they have been this year. But
hey, they beat Purdue yesterday.
Yeah, number 25 Purdue. That's not a bad win for them. But I think when you look at these, Michigan State easily could have lost to Nebraska. They did not play a great game their last time out, but they have, you know, a little bit like D'Antonio's teams, have won close games. You feel like neither team has much margin for error. Again, I guess we'll have to see how it is. If one of these teams wins by two touchdowns, then maybe all of a sudden we're going to find out more about their quarterback play or about maybe how explosive they are. I do think, you know, one thing is they both feel very much like traditional Big Ten teams in this regard. Kenneth Walker III has been a revelation coming out of Wake Forest and leading the nation in rushing. And I think Michigan has a stable of really good running backs. Hassan Haskins is a big physical dude who can make people miss. Blake Corum is really shifty and tough, and that's a good 1-2 punch. They have speed, you know, speed comes off the bench behind those guys too. You know, I guess the question is going to be, and this, I'm not saying neither team has Georgia's personnel on defense. I don't want to get it mixed up like this, but I think the question is, do they have a good enough quarterback play where you think, okay, they can really take a big step forward and not just be a legit top 15 team? Can they be a playoff contender? And I think that's the part where it's really a big TB, and we'll find out a little more this weekend in East Lansing.
Well, you know, everybody's starting to play the playoff scenario game. Our friend Ralph Russo from the AP, I love when he does his one's got to go tweets where he gives you a scenario where it's five, like here's one. One's got to go. Georgia 12-1, Alabama 12-1, SEC champ, Oklahoma 13-0, Oregon 12-1, Ohio State 12-1.
That would be bad for the Buckeyes.
Let's get into that for a second. I'm guessing you're saying that would be bad for the Buckeyes because of the Oregon factor, right?
Yeah, Oregon whipped them in Columbus. In Columbus. Uh-huh. By the way, and I'm gonna set you up because I know you're gonna start singing after I say what I'm about to say. Oregon whipped them in Columbus without arguably the best defensive player in college football playing. That guy's playing now, and that guy's kicking ass. So
that guy had as dominant a performance as you could ask for in the UCLA game yesterday.
So you agree with me? Buckeyes in big trouble if Oregon's a one loss team.
I think there's a difference between should they be in trouble and will they be in trouble. I don't know if you noticed, but the AP poll last week, Ohio State is 5 spots ahead of Oregon.
The AP poll, by the way, is not what determines the playoff, though, as we all know.
I would be fascinated to see how the committee does that, because they've been kind of haphazard about how much they enforce that head-to-head or not, right? We've certainly seen situations where they ignored it. And the thing is, like, if the committee came out with a ranking right now and Ohio State was ahead of Oregon, then I'd say no chance for Oregon, because Ohio State's about to play two teams that are currently in the top 10 and one that was in the top 10 as of last week. Oregon's not going to play teams like that down the stretch.
But if that's the case, Stu, we have this thing, we still don't know exactly what it means, the alliance, but the partnership of these, to have these kinds of games. If I am George Kliavkov and I am Rob Mullins, who, by the way, knows how that committee works probably better than anybody because he was on it and the chairman, I'd be like, why are we playing this team in Columbus if we have the same record? We beat them. And it wasn't like it was a fluky thing.
In Columbus.
In Columbus. And by the way, we beat them without our best player. And now you're going to we're jumping the gun on this. But if that's
I don't think it's going to happen, because I don't think Oregon's going to run the table. But if they did, if Oregon and Ohio State are both 12-1 champions, Oregon having beaten Ohio State in Columbus, and Ohio State gets in and they don't, it's going to be it's going to be complete outrage.
And by the way, since that loss, it was like, this is who Ohio State has beaten. They beat Tulsa in a game that was actually pretty close for a while. They blew out Akron. Akron's terrible. they blew out Rutgers. Rutgers isn't very good. They blew out Maryland. Maryland isn't very good. And they blew out Indiana on the road. It's not like anybody here is even in the ballpark of being a top 25 team. Now, obviously, Oregon has sputtered.
But they're about to play three of them.
I know, but I'm just saying where they're
Oregon
ranked, right?
Down the stretch is going to play. You know, this is rough. Colorado next week, who's terrible. Washington, who's terrible. Washington State, who I would call mediocre. Mm-hmm. Utah, who was starting to play better and then had a bad loss. Not a bad loss, but they did lose at Oregon State. And then Oregon State, who maybe possibly will be in the top 25, they're just going to have no chances to build their resume. So all I'm saying is, I'm not saying I would agree with it, but I could absolutely see the committee being like, and I remember this case. God, what year did this come up? I specifically remember a committee chairman saying the head-to-head is a tiebreaker when the resumes are very close. I could see them saying the resumes aren't close, therefore we didn't feel the need to invoke that tiebreaker.
Yeah, I mean, if you ask me, the Big Ten is considerably better than the Pac-12 right now.
You think?
No doubt. All my point, though, on this is...
By the way, if Ohio State gets into the Big Ten title game, they're probably going to play a fairly highly ranked team there, too.
Yeah, probably Iowa, we would think, at this point. We'll see where it goes. It could be a rematch against the Minnesota. It could be Wisconsin. I don't know. I don't know if it gets, if it's not
it's probably
Iowa,
gonna be Iowa.
If it's not Iowa, I'm not sure how highly ranked one of those other teams is going to be. Because if it's somehow Minnesota, by the way, you know, we all know, lost to Bowling Green.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Let's circle back. You know, I don't want to spend the whole podcast on the Big Ten, but I do think we should talk about Penn State losing to Illinois in this 9 overtime. I'm going to call it a charade because I think that, and I wrote about this in Final Thoughts, that I didn't necessarily have a problem with that 2-point format when they introduced it originally, because it was only going to come into play if they went to 5 overtimes, and that rarely ever happens. They moved it up to the 3rd overtime. There's plenty of triple overtime games. And it was just so, I mean, it was exciting, but it was also like, this isn't football.
Why are we determining this game? It would not be football if they decided on field goals, like, and they moved it back. That would not be football.
That wouldn't be football either, but this is, I think it was really exacerbated by the fact that, I'm sure when they came up with this rule, like, for instance, I remember this coming up in, the first time I saw it was in a UNC Virginia Tech game with Sam Howell as a freshman. And that was really exciting because these were, you know, they were two really good offenses. This was just painful. Neither quarterback could complete a pass. Illinois, for some reason, decided to stop running the ball.
There were drop passes.
Yeah.
There were dropped interceptions. It was
ugly. And by the time you got to like the fifth or sixth, I found that I was invested in it, but not because it's like, oh my gosh, who's going to win? It was because, oh my gosh, how bad is this? How much worse can this get? So
I definitely disagree. I thought,
so you're fine with it. Stick with the format.
You know, I think you are going to piss off somebody, whether you have it from the 5-yard line, the 10-yard line, or the 25. Once you start moving it further back, then I think you have less of a chance. You know, like, you're going to get some kind of chaos in this, no matter what you do. Right.
The intent of the rule was to cut down.
Which they did. You had 9 plays.
Which they did.
You had 9 plays on offense and 9 plays on defense. That is going to be far less than what you had in the Texas A&M LSU game. So I honestly don't have a problem with it. I thought it was, look, this is college football. You know, like, again, a lot of times people crap all over the, oh, it was so ugly and it was this and this. This is college football. This is kind of what you get. It is not the NFL. A lot of times teams lose games as opposed to win them. So
I absolutely like the college format better than the NFL format.
Yeah, I do too. And I, again, I understood why they got away from that. And I remember, you know, when I was back in my covering preps in South Florida, I remember there was like the Kansas tiebreaker or whatever that format was called. But in this regard, I didn't have a problem with it. I just thought it was very, very dramatic. And it is still football. It's just now here's the question. If you have seen this, watch this game, or if you're a coach and you know about it, you know, do you rep a lot more two-point plays to get ready for a game? I mean, you know, we talked to Bob Stoops, as I work with on the weekends. He said basically you come in with 3 2-point plays into a game. I mean, now obviously
there are other, yeah, you better have more than that.
Yeah, you're gonna have to have more than that. But again, coaches rep a lot of stuff if they think it's going to be a decider in if you win a game or not. I suspect
I would have a crazy impossible defend trick play.
Impossible to defend. Yeah, everybody likes the impossible defend play. That's it.
Just the crazy trick play that you just keep in your back pocket and you only break it out if you end up in one of these 2-point shootouts.
Well, you remember, so you have
other teams never going to see it on film.
Rep it. You have to rep it.
You rep it, but you never break it out so that it's not on tape, and you save it for one of these 2-point shootouts.
How much stuff?
I don't know.
How much stuff can you are you going to rep all the stuff that you're only going to break it out, and you're going to have to rep it at practice, and then you're taking away time for something else? I don't know.
I bet Nick Saban's analysts have encyclopedia sized book full of 2-point plays that they're ready to break out if this ever happens.
I'm sure there are a lot of staffs who have it where they've scouted. Like, there's a bunch of coaches I've talked to over time who said that, you know, they will look at all, you know, I remember this back in the Joe Brady gets to LSU days where he had watched all the 2-point plays and all the touchdown, you know, because all those cut-ups are available in the NFL every week. So they all watch them. I'm not saying every head coach would watch them. Maybe they do. But I know all those staffs watch them. And I am sure, like, just from the conversations I've had with different coaches, they'll be like, yeah, they get wind of a certain, you know, crazy 2-point idea that somebody had in, like, Wyoming football or Nebraska football. I'm like, yeah, let's try that. Or let's put a wrinkle on that. I think the question is, how do you rep that stuff to actually have your players be able to be competent running it? And how much can they keep in their heads to do? I mean, that's the other twist on it. But honestly, I like this. I get it why some people are not going to like it. But you're not going to please everybody. And
well, you have to remember why it's there. I mean, I saw people saying, why did they ever scrap the original format? Because Joe Burrow passed out from dehydration in the locker room after that 7 overtime game. And they just feel like they have I went and found the press release from when this new version was put in. They said that last year in 2020, the average overtime game added 16.8 plays per overtime period. So yeah, I could see why you'd want to avoid doing 4 or 5 of those. But I just think there's got to be something we can come to a solution at that's between starting at the 25 and starting at the 3. but no, what I really wanted to bring up is this podcast has been kind of a James Franklin fan club for quite a while.
You're going to say it's me. It's not you. I mean, I don't feel like you treat him like you treat Michigan, but
I don't treat James Franklin the way you do, no. Where you're like, he's the top, but I've always defended him against people who suggest he's completely overrated. But I do think we have to do a check in here. 4-5 last year. You wanted to throw that out because of COVID. Yep. Fine. They just lost to a really, you know, I think they were 20-something point favorites against Illinois. And now you're saying, okay, forget the playoff. That's off the table, okay. But you got 2 losses already, and you've still got to play Ohio State at Ohio State this week, Michigan, and at Michigan State. This one-time top-5 team could end up going 7-5, at which point I don't think James Franklin's getting the USC job or the LSU job.
Yeah, I don't even think it comes back to that. I just think it's a question of this is a really bad loss. I mean, look, because Illinois Look, credit to Brett Bielema, because he got some blowback from his comments about his offensive line, and whether it was misconstrued or not, I have no idea. But they ran the heck out of the ball, and they played very well. And then in the overtime, at some point, Art Sitkowski got hurt, and back comes Brandon Peters, and they got a really nice win. I mean, the thing, and I'll defer to my buddy Brady Quinn on this, he was like pointed out, what has been a real ill or an issue for Penn State is it's not just when they lose, they tend to follow up a loss with a loss. And that is to me a big enough concern. Now, what I would make the case on, because when we, before the game, you knew that Sean Clifford was a game time decision. The other two quarterbacks, Roberson and Veyu, who's the freshman, who's the Canadian freshman, I know they like him too, but they all got a bunch of reps. And it was like, okay, well, do they really need to play Clifford if he's not 100% to beat Illinois? Well, they played him. He was pretty shaky, and they couldn't get much going. And you're looking at it, it's like, man, this team.
If that's your best option.
Yeah, I just like when I looked at them, it's like I do think they're good on defense, and they're really good in the secondary, but they did not look like they had much margin for error. And I think, I go back to something you and I talked about a bunch. Like if I said to you, don't Google anything, like how good do you think Sean Clifford is? I think you would say, yeah, he's pretty good, but he's not the kind of guy who's going to lead you to a Big Ten championship, correct?
Correct.
Now some of it we could say, all right, he's on his third offensive coordinator in 3 years. That's not ideal circumstances. But again, when you watch that game, they did not look much better than Illinois. It did, I didn't feel like there was anything especially fluky about how this played out. It was just, it just wasn't a performance that you would see. Listen to this. They got outgained 395 to 227 by Illinois. They were 4 for 17 on third downs. And this is, again, like if you have an injured quarterback, you don't get outrushed 357 to 62. This wasn't like they played an academy team that all they do is run the ball. So,
and by the way, they have Jahan Dotson, one of the best receivers in college football, and they still couldn't convert a 2-point conversion for all those extra periods. I think it comes down to, he got into a bad situation at quarterback. Clifford actually looked better in this new offense until he got hurt. He certainly played well against Auburn and in that early part against Iowa, but there's no depth there. And I actually would think that might be kind of a recurring theme with Penn State right now. They have a good front line of players, but as soon as a couple guys get hurt, and the big one that came up in this game is they lost their star defensive tackle for the season. And then all of a sudden this defense that had been so dominant gets run over by Illinois running backs. So, I think that's what separates the Alabamas and Ohio States and what I would say even Oregon has showed they have good depth when guys get hurt from what's going on at Penn State, where the star defensive tackle gets hurt, the quarterback gets hurt, and suddenly they can't beat Illinois.
Yeah, look, and this the defensive tackle you're talking about is PJ Mustafa. The quarterback issue, I think, is a tricky thing across the board because the backup quarterback is Will Levis, and he's not there anymore. He's obviously at Kentucky playing well in the SEC. So I think that part is different than the having, because they actually had gotten players out of the portal to build up their, especially their defensive line, one guy from Duke and one guy from Temple, and those guys have been really good. But I think that has been, a different challenge. And, just not good enough is you look at it, it was like, that was very much looked like a very Brett Bielema kind of game where they're going to whip you at the line of scrimmage if they can, and they did.
Shifting gears, the Big 12. I feel like Oklahoma has become the polarizing team of 2021. Everybody thinks they're super overrated. They were down 10-0 to Kansas at halftime. You talk about, Penn State shouldn't lose to Illinois. Oklahoma should not even be in a competitive game against Kansas. Now, they scored touchdowns on all five possessions they had in the second half. Caleb Williams made one of the more smartest plays I've ever seen. grabbing the ball from Kennedy Brooks on that fourth and one. Some people will say it should have been stopped for forward progress. He wasn't. Went into the rule book, had never dealt with this rule in the rule book before. You can, in fact, if it's still behind the line of scrimmage, you can, in fact, do a forward handoff.
As long as it's an eligible receiver.
Yeah. So they ended up winning 35-23, but
when that happened, it was a critical. It was a fourth and one. The game was, I think they were up five at that point. If they get stopped, different story. Not
they get stopped, Kansas got a shot to win.
Yeah.
So here's the conundrum. Oklahoma, you know, it's easy to sit here and say, oh, they keep getting the, you know, they keep barely surviving. They're not as good as people say. Why are they the number three team in the country? On the other hand, they are 8-0 for the first time since 2004. Think about all the great Oklahoma teams that have come since 2004 that have played in national championship games and playoffs. And they didn't just get scares. They lost at some point through the first eight games. So I feel like they're shaky, but you got to give them some credit for getting to this point.
Yes, I would agree. Although it's not like they have actually gone. I mean, let's talk about who they've beaten along the way here. Tulane, not good. Western Carolina, FCS. Nebraska, not good. West Virginia's mediocre. K-State, mediocre. Texas is probably the best team they played, and Texas isn't great. I mean, they're pretty good. TCU, not good. And Kansas, I think they're much improved, but they're terrible to be much improved.
Yeah, well, if the reckoning's coming, it's going to come pretty soon because they have three games with top 25 teams coming up with... You know, they're going to play...
Who else do they have still?
What's that?
Who else do they have coming up? Please tell me.
Oh, I'm counting Iowa State. I haven't... The new poll hasn't come out yet, but I assume Iowa State's going to be in it. So they're going to play Baylor. They're going to play Iowa State, and they're going to play Oklahoma State. They're going to play basically the three best teams besides themselves in the last month of the season. I don't think they're going to win all of them. And the reason why is in this Jason Kersey story. By the way, I love that I can just go on Sunday mornings and pull up our beat writer stories and steal their stats. We thought the Oklahoma defense was going to be better. Early on, maybe they were looking a little bit better. They're not better. They are giving up an average of 7.2 yards per play over the past four games. 7.2 yards per play is terrible, and especially against the teams you just mentioned, including Kansas, who... kept running them. I mean, they had a 100-yard rusher in this game against Oklahoma. So, you know, it's Brocktober. Iowa State beats Oklahoma State. Getting it going again.
You want to come? You want to come join me back?
Will be compelling.
You want to come join me back on the Cyclones bandwagon?
I do. In that, I mean, obviously they're not going to go to the playoff, but they're kind of still where they would have hoped to be. They've got a shot to win the Big 12. Is this the year they beat Oklahoma?
They've beaten Oklahoma before.
They did, but it was way back in 20... Oh, no, no, no.
No, never mind. You got to stop. They've beaten them.
Yeah. They've been there. They've been right there with Oklahoma. They beat them last year. They just haven't been able to take that final step and win the conference. I think it's going to be fascinating because I think... I mean, there was no shame in Oklahoma State losing by a field goal on the road to Iowa State. They suffered their first loss. I think they're still really good. And Baylor has been very impressive in Dave Aranda's second season. They beat Iowa State already. So I'm not ready to pencil in Oklahoma for another Big 12 championship yet because I think they face some stiff competition here.
Hey, any shot, and this is getting put in the cart way before everything else, including the horse, but any shot if Iowa State just runs the table, we could have a two-loss.
Playoff, you can put him in the back of the playoff as a two-loss team?
Yeah, trying.
I doubt it. Part of it will be, is Cincinnati in the mix? If undefeated Cincinnati's there, I don't think a two-loss.
No, I don't think so either. I think they need.
You know, also you wouldn't want the Alabama beating Georgia scenario.
No, that one I think I don't know how. If somehow there was a two-loss Big 12 team, you just have to accept that there's going to be two SEC teams in there. I could see now
two Big Ten teams.
Although now
nobody's mentioning that, but you know, let's just play it out and say Michigan beats Michigan State this weekend and runs the table up until the Ohio State game and loses. 11-1 Michigan with a few top 25 wins. You won't think they would be in the mix?
I think they would be in the mix. Absolutely. It would be fascinating if all of a sudden Nebraska could play spoiler down the stretch.
The problem is they've already played most of these teams.
They have some big games left. They have
they
Iowa
still play
and,
Ohio State
and Iowa, Iowa yeah. and Ohio State. So, let's touch on one other thing. I just want to throw this out because we started to talk about the Oklahoma State Iowa State game. The worst call I have ever seen. It was an embarrassment to the Big 12. Yes, Xavier Hutchinson ended up catching a touchdown pass a minute or two later. That celebration call, was
taunting.
Taunting was atrocious. Like, first of all, I don't even want to say they're college guys and they should be allowed to play with emotion. Like, this is just whatever you have been most outraged by that relates to this sport, our sport. It does not top how I felt when I saw that. I was just like, what the fuck? You know, like, that's the worst. Like, when you watched it back, you're like, what was this guy looking at who called
Somebody
this?
Was just waiting to throw that flag. I know it's a point of emphasis. He was just sitting on that flag.
Point
ready
of
to
emphasis?
Throw
what are we? What is
of,
the point of emphasis there? Like,
I don't know. I don't know why we're so hung up on this.
Like, I.
By the way, earlier on Saturday, you know, I watched a little bit of the Wake Forest Army game, and, you know, I would kind of catch it in bits and pieces. And I happened to be watching when A.T. Perry caught a wide open touchdown, you know, and it was so wide open that it was one of those things where you can kind of take your time getting in the end zone. And I saw him point at something, and I was like, what was he pointing at? And I'm watching the replay. I don't understand. What's he pointing at? He was pointing at a 7-Eleven ad. As in, always open.
Okay, well,
I'm like, well, that's a much more boisterous celebration than what the what happened in that game.
Hopefully, A.T. Perry will get all the 7-Eleven ads in his hometown of Lake Worth, Florida, where he's a big star. And good for him. He deserves it, and good for Wake Forest. But that call, I just cannot get over it. Like, you know, they have point of emphasis. They need to have a real discussion about, like, you know, what we're doing, if that is anywhere near the threshold of being flagged. And it's like, you know how bad the, and I get why targeting is in there. That's a safety issue.
Right.
This is not a safety issue, you know, what happened. And the points are off the board. It's just like, come on, like, you know, football is hard. It is a physical sport. It is hard to score touchdowns. I know that there are more touchdowns now than there were 20 years ago, but just not a good thing for the sport at all.
You were not alone. I saw a lot of people retweeting that highlight and being like, this officiating crew should be fired. This officiating crew should be suspended. I'll be interested to see if the Big 12 deals with that at all. Because on the one hand, yes, it seems egregious. On the other hand, they may say...
There is no other hand. There is no other hand.
There is no other hand other than it didn't decide the outcome of the game. He scored a touchdown. They scored a touchdown.
That had should have nothing to do with it. That had nothing to do. What happens if that had nothing to do with it. This is not a ball don't lie situation. And look, I feel like the officials do not get too much blame for a lot of things that happen. It's like bang, bang, play. The targeting is hard. A lot of these calls are really, really hard to, the spots, we had a spot of a ball on a fourth down in one of the games. Like, those things are,
same game. Yeah. That same game came down to 2 inches on a spot. And those spots are just completely unscientific. Nobody knows if that's actually where the ball ended up. But that wasn't a bad call.
No, but those are really hard. You're not going to please everybody. Like the play in the Tennessee Ole Miss game a week earlier. Those are this to me is just different though. Just like why are we having them? I guess I don't know. I've gone on my rant.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we sometimes do our shout out of the week. I want to give our shout out to Pitt head coach Pat Narduzzi. By the way, Panthers had a very interesting stat that they pointed out. Pat Narduzzi, along with Nick Saban, anytime you were mentioned with Nick Saban in the same coaching stat, that's carrying a lot of weight. The only coach who has beaten Dabo Swinney multiple times at this time, they're both 2-2 against them after beating the, not hapless, but the listless Clemson Tigers. They are 6-1. Kenny Pickett is a legit Heisman contender. I don't know where he is on your ballot. Is he in your top three?
No. I was impressed yesterday. I thought he played really well. I don't see.
Is he close to your top three?
He is, but it's what I've gotten to in the past. Like, let's not just default to the quarterback. I mean, you're telling me Kenny Pickett is a better player than Kayvon Thibodeau or
I'm
Jordan
not
Davis.
You that, but
Or Will Anderson. Or
Kayvon,
by the way, you know who should
games,
be on your
right.
Heisman ballot, but he's never going to get there because his team is 3-4. Drake London is having an insane season. But look, I mean, I first of all, credit to Narduzzi. I know I was really harsh on him a few weeks ago. I think that this Pitt team is just different than in recent years. They did obviously stub their toe against Western Michigan, but in ACC play, they've been taking care of business. And how's this is kind of badass here. Our friend Molly McGrath, who was the sideline reporter on that game, tweeted afterward, "Pat Narduzzi told me he passed out gold Sharpies to the team Friday night because the victory over Clemson would be a signature win."
Very good. One other stat on the Clemson thing, and this is kind of blew my mind. Matt Zenitz, who works for On3, he tweeted this out. "There are only two Power 5 teams yet to score 20 points in regulation against an FBS opponent. 0-7, Arizona is one. The other, Clemson. They both played six games against..." That is insane.
Yep.
I know that earlier in the year that myself and Grace Rayner had done that story on what's wrong with the Clemson offense.
You need a
plenty
sequel.
If you're not... Yeah, we need a sequel. You're correct.
Well, I think... I don't know if DJ Uiagalelei... At what point he lost confidence, but he cleared... Maybe it was that first game after he got destroyed by Georgia. He finally got benched yesterday after he threw a shovel pass that turned into a pick six, which I'm not sure I've ever seen a shovel pass return for a pick six. So that means that if you go back to January, the initial preseason Heisman odds from Vegas, the top two Heisman odds were Spencer Rattler and DJ Uiagalelei, and they have both now been benched.
By the way, while you're tagging that, who was your preseason national title pick?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that.
Was it Clemson?
It was Clemson.
You know what? We should call this podcast Two Dumbasses, because I had Clemson too. I didn't know you. I wasn't setting you up that way. That was mine.
Yeah. I got some things right. I was on the Ole Miss bandwagon. They're heading toward a New Year's Six bowl.
I'm not asking you for a referendum.
I was right that UNC was overrated.
I blew that one. Yeah, we both, man. We gave Dabo and DJ, we really gave Dabo the total benefit of the doubt. And I don't think anybody saw
it. Well, nobody could have. If you want to say you shouldn't have picked Clemson because they lost Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, okay. But I wouldn't have guessed. Whatever your definition of struggling, like, oh, they would struggle to replace those guys, it would have still been far better than where they are.
It's just remarkable how bad they have been. Like, it's like they're 117th in the country in offense. 117th.
Well, the stat you said about not scoring 21 points is insane. And by the way, it's not like they've been playing a murderer's row of teams. They couldn't do it against Syracuse. They couldn't do it against Georgia Tech. Hey, real quick, you want? Here's my shout out. There's a
guy.
I know
it's gonna be. It's gonna be in all caps, isn't it?
There's a quarterback who is not getting.
Oh, never mind. Okay.
Nearly enough accolades. You know, you mentioned Kenny Pickett for Heisman. Okay, I'll give you that. Kenny Pickett is not the leading ACC leader in total offense. You know who is?
Yeah, the slinging lefty at UVA.
Brennan Armstrong is having himself a year. He is averaging 424.6 yards a game, Bruce. He single-handedly just absolutely destroyed Georgia Tech. Now, Virginia's completely fallen off the radar. I think all their games are on ACC networks. Nobody ever sees this guy. I'm just saying, like, Bronco Mendenhall, who, by the way, is going back to play BYU this week, which is pretty cool. You think of him as a defensive guy. He's now had Bryce Perkins and now Brennan Armstrong, two just phenomenal dual threat quarterbacks who are kind of like, you know, one of the quarterbacks who are their entire offense, basically.
Yes. I thought you were going to do the shout out was going to be Brady Hoke at 7-0 at San Diego.
Absolutely. 7-0 San Diego State. By the way, the Mountain West, according to all of these computer rankings, is better than the AAC this year. And I can absolutely see that, because I think the AAC has a pretty steep drop off after Cincinnati and SMU. I did thank you, weather gods, for delaying that Houston game by 5 hours. So we had something to watch during the Pac-12 after dark. But yeah, they almost blew it against East Carolina.
Who doesn't love Dana after dark?
They, at least once they got to overtime, they took care of business real fast. That's a sneaky good game this week. SMU against Houston, kind of to determine who will be, you know, the threat to Cincinnati. Real quick, this week in the Pac-12, it's not an official segment, but I feel like every week we throw in a Pac-12 thing at the end, because why not? We still care. I mean, you mentioned earlier, the story of the Oregon-UCLA game to me was Kayvon Thibodeau, who has not been at full strength for most of the season, but now he is, and UCLA could not block him at all, certainly one-on-one. Some of those replays are just like, oof.
Yeah, not a good situation to have. Dulcich is a really good receiving tight end, but he is like, if
he shouldn't be blocking Kayvon.
Yeah, maybe Michael Martinez could be up against him and have a better shot. But that was like, that was unfair, that one.
That being said, even with that, UCLA had the ball and a chance to tie or win at the end. Now, I would say Kayvon Thibodeau knocking out Dorian Thompson-Robinson on the last drive probably doomed the Bruins, who Ethan Garber was eventually threw an interception, but. Anthony Brown is still not the guy you feel really confident in is going to lead you to the playoff. You know, he played better for most of that game yesterday, and then he had that terrible interception in the end zone when they should have been, you know, trying to kick a field goal or score a touchdown and give themselves a cushion at the end.
Mario Cristobal did go on a vigorous defense of his quarterback and his leader of his team, and look, they're finding ways to win. Remember, they're without C.J. Verdell, who's arguably the best running back on the West Coast. And Travis Dye came in, and he almost ran. I mean, he doesn't look like a short yardage back, but he at one point had like 7 carries for 4 touchdowns or something like that. And he's got to stick it to, you know, he told me earlier in the week, he grew up here in Southern California as a UCLA fan. They didn't recruit him. And yeah, I got a chip on my shoulder, and he worked it out and got his NFL big brother got to see it in person. So that was a cool story.
And the other intriguing plot line in the Pac-12 is that the other school in Oregon, the Beavers, are one win away from being bowl eligible for the first time since 2013. But I think their goals are beyond that at this point. How cool would it be if they don't call it the Civil War anymore, whatever we're calling that game now, was for the Pac-12 North?
Yeah, that is a game. Look, how many games? I feel like you've gone to, like, all the games you've gone to have involved in Oregon.
I've only been to 2, and they both involved Oregon, right?
I think you may be going to a third.
To that game, Thanksgiving weekend?
Yes.
I have a hard time believing that's going to be the biggest game of Thanksgiving weekend, but, you know, we'll see. It would be easier. It would certainly be easier if, you know, I hate being in airports on Thanksgiving weekend. It would certainly be easier to do that than to say Ann Arbor, Michigan, but let's see how it plays out. As always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. and ask us anything. One thing we haven't had a chance to address yet is Group of Five conference realignment mania this week. I called it in the column the Group of Five realignment Hunger Games. I just don't have a sense of how interested people are in that, in the Conference USA Sunbelt domino of all this. But if you are, send a question about it to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.